I'm talking with Dr. Dave Meach, Senior Research Scientist for the U.S. Department of the Interior, U.S. Geological Survey, and Adjunct Professor at the University of Minnesota. And we're talking today about the myths and outright distortions about wolf-human encounters, especially in light of the recent release of the movie The Grey. Dr. Meach, I'd like to start off, if you could just give me a quick bio on your background in studying wolves and your encounters with wolves.
Well, I've studied wolves for the last 54 years in several places in the world. Isle Royale National Park is where I started and moved to Minnesota. I've been studying wolves in Minnesota since 1966. And then did a study in Denali National Park, Alaska, from 1986 to 1993, and one on Ellesmere Island in far northern Canada from the summers of 1986 through 2009. And that latter one, the last one, involved living with wolves during the summer near their den. That's the study that's probably most relevant to direct interactions between myself and wolves. But I've also was part of the reintroduction of wolves to Yellowstone Park and have been studying wolves there since that reintroduction in 1995. And I've had some experience studying wolves in Italy and other parts of the world, but I think that gives you some idea of what my experience is.
Have you ever felt endangered by wolves in your decades of research?
Well, I have to confess that there was one time for perhaps 30 seconds or a minute where I was pretty uneasy about a wolf. This is a wolf that I'd been working with for a few summers, and I was near its den, and the animal came up to my partner and me. We were lying on a tundra just sort of taking a break, and this animal came up and sniffed my shoes and then went around behind me. I was kind of lying on one elbow, and so I really couldn't look behind me, and that wolf was a big male, very, very friendly. He had tried to take my glove off one time. Anyway, when he was behind me, and I didn't know what he was doing, and I couldn't see him, my partner could, but I didn't know, and I had to confess to my partner. I said, you know, for the first time in my life, I'm kind of afraid of this animal. I said, you know, what if he were to come up like some dog sometimes will do and kind of nip at the back of your neck or your hair or your hat or something like that, and I jumped up, what would he do? And my partner said, well, you know, we're both unarmed. I wouldn't worry. And that didn't allay me at all. But anyway, the wolf never did anything like that. It was only behind me for about a minute, and then turned around and went over where I could see it, and it's about 10 feet away, and lay down near us, and then my fear subsided. But that was the only time. The thing is, I've been up next to them on the ground when they were killing a musk ox, and probably within 50 feet. And I saw what they could do. It wouldn't take much to down a human. And so I know what they could do. However, that was the only time I've ever been in a situation where I was really afraid of them.
Well, put it in perspective, though. I mean, how many countless encounters and hours of exposure, and you're telling me you've had one 30-second or 60-second period of time where you just weren't sure. I mean, right?
Yeah. I remember my first time, you know, I was probably 21 or so as a graduate student on Isle Royale, and I was studying wolves from an aircraft, and watching them kill moose. I wanted to investigate a moose that the wolves had killed soon after they killed it. And so I had the pilot land me, and I snowshoed in. I had almost no experience with wolves on the ground at that time. So I wasn't really sure what was going to happen. And it was on Isle Royale National Park, and at that time the Park Service, this would have been 1959, the Park Service made me carry a revolver because so little was known about wolf interactions with people at that time. So I did have a sidearm with me, and as I approached the wolf-killed moose, I saw the wolves run away. There was a lot of brush around, but I could see most of them run away. And I got to the moose carcass, and everything was, the wolves were gone. And meanwhile, the pilot and plane were circling above me. I told the pilot, if they start coming after me, make a dive down, try to scare them off with the noise or something. So I went in and examined the carcass, started putting it up and everything, and all of a sudden I heard the plane kind of diving down towards the trees above me, and I thought, I bet the wolves are coming back. And I looked up, and here about 75 feet away was a pair of wolves running towards me. And I thought, well, I had a movie camera in my hand. I thought, should I take a movie of these things, or should I draw the revolver, And I drew the gun, and just my motion pulling the gun out, the wolves saw that and skidded to a halt, turned around and ran the other direction. So that gave me, the idea that, well, maybe these things really aren't that dangerous to people. So that was the first time I had a real encounter with a wolf.
Well, it seems that every time Hollywood churns out another monster movie starring wolves, the International Wolf Center spends the rest of the year trying to correct the falsehoods and, undo the damage. The Gray, of course, being the latest example of wolves depicted as relentless, evil man-eaters. In your experience, fact or fiction?
Yeah, that is real fiction. I saw the trailers of that movie, and then I've read a lot of the reviews and stuff, and that's total fiction. It wouldn't be anything like that. They don't act like it was portrayed there.
Well, based on your last story about just simply pulling a gun and looking, standing your ground and being threatening yourself, seems to dispel that whole idea that they will stop at nothing to get at you.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, this pack had 15 wolves in it, so it was a big one, and I was certainly outnumbered, but they were very wary. And these wolves, again, these were in a national park where they were not harassed, they weren't hunted, they'd been protected, and that had been the case since they arrived in the park. Would have been approximately 10 years before that they made their way across the ice from Canada. And yet all that time, being protected from human harassment, they still were quite afraid of people.
So in your opinion, what is the best thing to do if you were to encounter a wolf, say on a skiing trail or something, you're by yourself, you don't have a revolver like you did in your encounter?
First thing to do is not run. Because just like dogs, and that's a strong, I might even just say a strong instinct in wolves. As something starts running, they will start chasing it. And so you certainly don't do that. The other thing to do would be to stand, turn around, face them, make yourself as large as you can, standing tall and waving your arms. Yelling probably would be a good idea. That's what I would do. And just sort of assume a threatening posture. We've got cases of deer actually killing wolves, so wolves are afraid of animals that stand their ground, even an animal as small as a deer. In one case, we had a deer that stood off three wolves, and they never did tackle the thing. The deer just stood there and threatened the wolves, and that was enough.
We must be talking about a buck with antlers.
Actually not. This was a doe. But you have to remember that the main weapon of a deer is its front hooves. They were very sharp and pointed. And we had a case where a deer actually hit a wolf in the head, in the skull, with one of those hooves and killed it. I think that skull is on display up at the Wolf Center, actually.
There were a number of terms used in this movie that were somewhat disturbing and perhaps even laughably outdated, but I was wondering if you could straighten out some of these outdated terms that the main character used and was throwing around, you know, as the expert, survivor's expert. He was talking about the alpha male and the omega female. Can you give me a little background on the origin of that?
Yeah, those are, like you say, outdated terms. It used to be thought that a wolf pack arose by a number of wolves getting together and kind of fighting out the pecking order, and one then winning and becoming the dominant alpha member that ruled all the others by force, and the bottom-ranking one was the omega and all that. That's very outdated. A wolf pack, almost all wolf packs, 99% of them easily, are families. A pair of adult wolves that have produced a litter of offspring, usually average six, and then some of those survive and grow older. They join with the parents on the hunt, and that's a wolf pack. And those offspring reach 1, 2, or 3 years of age and begin maturing sexually, then they leave the pack and go off on their own, try to find a mate who's doing the same thing, form their own pair, and produce their own offspring and form their own pack. So these animals that lead the pack are really the parents. So what we used to call the alpha male is really the father of the pack, or the breeding male, we call him now. And the alpha female, what we used to call that, is the breeding female, the mother of the pack. It's as simple as that.
Getting back to the movie, what's the likelihood of a mastermind wolf controlling the rest of the pack?
Think of it as a human family, because it is a family, and that's a very good analogy to a wolf pack. It's the pair, the breeding pair, the father and the mother, that control the pack, and the others behave based on the behavior of that pair. So if that pair decides to get up and go someplace, the others follow.
But could they direct them to go in and attack?
No. I know what you mean. No, one wolf cannot tell the other wolf what to do in any way, by any kind of communication or anything else. The offspring take their cues from what the adults do, but the adults do not direct the offspring to do anything. In fact, they can't control them often. I've seen adult wolves, this is probably also like a human family, I've seen adult wolves bowl pups right over because the pups wanted to follow them and the adults didn't want them to follow, and they'd knock them over with their nose or paw or something, and then the pups would get up and start following again, and the adult would knock it over. So they really can't control what their offspring do.
It's amazing how much we insinuate our own ability to direct and control other people off onto the behaviors of animals, isn't it?
Well, yeah, and in that movie, that was very, very far-fetched. I don't know of another species myself where one member of a group directs the other to do anything. It's almost always one guiding on the other, sort of taking their cues from each other. But I don't know of any species that can direct another member of its species to do anything.
I also got a kick out of that that scene near the beginning of the movie where they're running from the plane wreck and they're trying to get to the tree line, and there's a pack of, I don't know, 20 to 40 wolves coming over the hill behind them, maybe a couple of hundred yards out, and these survivors in 3 feet of snow are somehow able to outrun them a distance of several hundred yards. Can you talk a little bit about how absurd that is?
Yeah, well, there's no way you could outrun a wolf. I mean, think of it in terms of trying to outrun a dog. You can't, you know. I mean, humans just don't have that capability.
Do you remember the whole den scene near the end of the movie where the protagonist, the main character in the movie, is finds himself in this playground of bones and littered antlers, and it says, you know, oh no, I'm in the wolf's den and I'm really in for it. Can you explain to me how ridiculous that is in this winter scene?
Yes. Wolves only den in for a very short period, actually 8 weeks, and in the late spring, early summer. The den is used not as a year-round refuge, but rather as a place to bear their pups and for the to protect the pups for their first few weeks of life. Even when the den is being used during those 8 weeks, the pups are only in it for the first 3 weeks. That is, they don't come out for the first 3 weeks. And it's almost always just the mother of the pups that goes down into the den. Rarely do any of the others go in. And so, you know, after 8 weeks of age, the pups don't even stay around the den, and the whole pack moves off to other areas. And by early fall, the whole pack, including the pups who are now pretty well grown, they become nomadic around their territory, and the territory could be anywhere from 25 square miles to several hundred square miles, depending on the location. In this case, in the far northern Canada and Alaska, those wolves travel around areas that are even 1,000 square miles in extent. So they don't headquarter out of a den at that time at all, only in the very in late spring, early summer.
And even at that point, wolves hunt throughout their territory. They're not going to drag a deer carcass back 1,000 miles to feed in front of their den.
No. They don't. The den is just used for that short period, and then the wolves are just nomadic around their large territory.
All right, so we can cross that off the list of having any relevancy. One of the intended themes of the movie is about man intruding on the territory of wild animals, and in this case, the behavior of this fictional wolf pack is depicted as merely protecting their backyard, if you will. How realistic is that?
Well, the wolves will try to protect their territory from other wolves, but as far as protecting them from people, you know, they all wolves do, like when I intrude on their territory or someplace that they don't like, or they don't like me, they bark and howl. But that's about it, and then run away. Someone from the producer's office called me before the movie came out. It was after I'd already seen the trailer. And the person asked me, you know, what I thought of what I saw, and I said, well, it's totally ridiculous. And you're going to get a lot of flack from people who know wolves.
Right, I understand from their standpoint, it serves their purpose as well. However, from the standpoint of those of us like the International Wolf Center and those in the legislature who are trying to unravel how to handle human-wolf conflicts and wolf management, it doesn't exactly help, does it?
It does not help, and it just makes it so much harder. You can imagine, I mean, I've spent essentially my entire career trying to find out the truth about wolves and to portray it, and to see something like this is just devastating. It really has an impact on people when they see this. And the general public, regardless of how many reviews, negative reviews the movie might get and all of the educational material we and other people might put out, most of the general public are going to get their information about wolves from that movie and other similar movies.
And how is that going to affect the discourse?
Well, then it, you know, then it has, it translates into negative feelings by people about wolves and makes it harder to protect them when they need protection and to portray the truth about them. And if one movie shows one thing and then we say something else, and how does the public know what to believe? It's very frustrating.
Well, in the coming weeks ahead and months ahead, the Wolf Center will be trying to deal with the factual side of this whole conversation. And if you had, in a summary statement, if you had a message for the public regarding this movie and wolf management going forward, regardless of what state that might be in, what would you have to say?
I would say get your information from a reliable source, and that would be the International Wolf Center. Just Google it on wolf.org, and know that the people there are trying to provide factual, science-based information rather than the kind of emotional appeals and fiction that you read in Hollywood movies.